Greetings. Welcome to the Storytime Broadcast, an anthology. I'm Eric Brah, and each episode I read a story, and with the help of the audio geniuses at Landship Audio, we hope to entertain you. If you care to support this podcast and all broadcast projects, donations can be made via a button at my website, ericbrah.com. A short time ago, I shared a story in bonus episodes from the audiobooks I have been working on featuring the magic detective, Mr. Lewis, in Student Loans Paid in Blood. Well, T.W. Allen has offered up a bonus story to celebrate the second book's release, The Cursed Apps. So, here is Ghost Bar, a hard-boiled magic adventure by T.W. Allen. Chapter 1, Dead Drunks. The lot wasn't so much empty as raised. A building had once stood there, but it had been demolished, and the rubble already carted off. Half of the foundation was still in a pit that used to be the basement, the crumbling of old age exacerbated by newfound exposure to the elements. The lot was supposed to be fenced in, but the chain on the gate lay limp with a broken lock that fit right in with the bleakness of the construction hellscape. "How long has it been like this?" asked the man in the black suit.
2 months, said the barkeep. First time it happened was just after the building came down. Police came and demolition stopped. When they left, demolition started on the basement, and that evening the second body turned up.
Dead drunk? Asked the man in the black suit.
Coroner called it alcohol poisoning, said the barkeep.
Dead drunk, said the man in the black suit. And how long had that one been missing?
Maybe 8 hours, replied the barkeep. Last witness claimed to see him entering the Bloody Crown.
Which we're standing in front of, said the man in the black suit.
What's left of it, confirmed the barkeep. Kind of hard to have a pint at a pub that's been torn down.
And all the deceased were last seen entering a bar that no longer exists? Asked the man in the black suit.
Not the first one. He just turned up dead. Wasn't a pattern. Wasn't a fuss any more than you'd expect after an accident. The rest? 8 men found dead of alcohol poisoning in front of a torn-down bar with a dozen witnesses swearing the bar was still there. Does this meet your criteria for one of your physics problems, Mr. Lewis?
Mr. Lewis had a business card that read Physics Consultant, but that was something of an in-joke. Mr. Lewis consulted on matters that fell outside the laws of physics, matters that came from dark places and sometimes went bump in the night. Some explanations are more mundane than others, explained Mr. Lewis.
Mass hysteria manifesting itself in a shared false memory. Serial mass hysteria, I suppose.
Conformity pressure for witnesses. Some witnesses turn up only wanting attention. Doesn't really account for 9 dead men, though.
No, it does not.
Which brings up the possibility of some sort of temporal portal to a time when the bar still existed.
Are you saying we used to overserve people until they died? Growled the barkeep.
Not you, personally. This building was around for over a century, wasn't it?
Longer than that. Goes back to the 1880s.
And it was always a bar?
Even during Prohibition.
Then it's possible they drank more than their fill in, say, 1895, and returned to the present when they died.
Time travel stops when you die?
The barkeep cocked an eyebrow. Curses sometimes end at death, corrected Mr. Lewis. It's a possibility. Teleportation is another. Obviously, they were drinking somewhere, and it doesn't seem to be here.
Can you convince the city they were drinking somewhere else? Asked the barkeep. With all those lying witnesses, the city inspectors are starting to think I might be running an underground bar. That's the real reason construction has stopped.
You know the rules of my engagement, said Mr. Lewis. I'm not officially here. And this construction, there will be a new bar when it's complete?
Yes and no. It will still be the Bloody Crown, but there will be some improvements. Bigger bathrooms, new shelves, more booths. It will look mostly the same, and then there will be 4 floors of condos on top of it that weren't there before.
That means there's another possibility, said Mr. Lewis. These people could have been drinking themselves to death in your future.
There must be a future where you fix my building permits, moaned the barkeep. I don't see them letting us resume construction until this has been cleared up.
The noise was like a very large sack of potatoes hitting the ground, and it came from behind the construction fence. The barkeep slowly pushed his head through the gate and gazed to the right.
At least you came at the right time, said the barkeep. Looks like we're up to 10 bodies now.
Chapter 2: A Well-Regulated Supply Chain. Is this how they found the rest of them? Asked Mr. Lewis, standing over the corpse. The body belonged to a man in his mid-20s. The eyes were wide open and his pupils dilated. The vomit around his mouth, on his chin, down the front of his shirt was not yet dry, and the smell of alcohol was strong enough to overpower the other odors.
I've only seen pictures, replied the barkeep. The others weren't covered in their own puke, though.
At least the booze is covering up the scent of vomit, said Mr. Lewis.
That's not good booze,
said the barkeep, leaning over for a sniff.
Smells like rubbing alcohol and a hint of juniper.
Worst gin ever?
I sure wouldn't serve whatever it is, replied the barkeep. Did he fall from somewhere?
Probably. Mr. Lewis glanced up from the wreckage of the former basement. A fall of one story could have made that thud. The question is whether he was dead before he hit the ground or fell in and died from impact. At first glance, I'd guess he was already dead.
We shouldn't be here.
The barkeep made for the remaining fragment of steps leading up out of the former basement.
The cops are going to want to ask me the same questions all over again. And if I'm found here, they'll think I overserved them without a liquor license.
Or attempting to conceal the crime by dumping the body, agreed Mr. Lewis. They crept out of the pit, but hadn't gotten more than a half a block away before they were stopped.
I think I'm lost, said a young woman with frantic eyes. Can you tell me where the Bloody Crown is?
It used to be right there.
The barkeep pointed a thumb toward the construction site.
It's been torn down for a couple months, though.
Very funny, the young woman frowned. My boyfriend walked into the Bloody Crown an hour ago, and I'm coming back to meet him. Am I a block north? I know it was around here somewhere.
Did you see him walk in? Asked Mr. Lewis.
Red building, white trim, sign that said Bloody Crown with a crown on it? Yes, I saw him walk in. Could you please tell me where it is?
Mr. Lewis glanced quizzically at the barkeep, who nodded affirmatively. And this was an hour ago? Asked Mr. Lewis.
That's what I said, replied the young woman. The map on my phone says it's supposed to be here.
It was here 2 months ago, said Mr. Lewis. Now it's a construction site. I'm afraid we can't help you. He gave the barkeep a half nod, and the two of them left her on the sidewalk. Chapter 3: Life's a Party. The next evening, Mr. Lewis and the barkeep returned to the former site of the Bloody Crown and set up shop at the corner of the block across the street.
Wouldn't it be easier to just wait in the construction site? Asked the barkeep.
Three problems, said Mr. Lewis. If something's going on physically in that space, I want to observe it before interacting with it. There's also a possibility we could be displaced if something else wants to occupy it. But the bottom line is, I don't think we want to be seen physically inside that construction site if the police happen around. You're lucky they haven't realized the girlfriend encountered you in front of the site before the body was found. Across the street is easier to explain than inside. The barkeep grunted in affirmation, and they waited. An hour went by. The street traffic thinned, and then the Bloody Crown appeared. It didn't fade in. One moment there was a construction site, and the next the old building had returned. Mr. Lewis crossed the street for a closer look. As he was doing so, a man strolled in front of the bar, paused to glance in the window, then stepped through the front door. The Bloody Crown vanished as the door closed. Mr. Lewis ran to the construction site and stuck his head through the gate. There was no one in the construction pit. The man had vanished with the bar. Mr. Lewis pulled his head out of the gate and stepped back. We wait at the corner, he said to the barkeep. They waited. 20 minutes later, they heard a familiar thud coming from the construction site. When they got to the pit, once more they found a body lying there.
This time, it was still alive.
"Why can't I see?"
groaned the man at the bottom of the pit as they arrived. Just like the last body, he reeked of cheap booze. "Do you know how you got here?" asked Mr. Lewis, leaning over and checking the man's unfocused eyes.
"Costume party," wheezed the man. "Flappers and gangsters, and the woman tried to burn the place."
"How did you leave the party?" asked Mr. Lewis. The man didn't answer. He didn't breathe either. Blindness and flappers. Mr. Lewis looked up. "It speaks of bathtub gin and methyl alcohol poisoning. You know anything about someone trying to burn down the place during Prohibition? Maybe around 1927? Calvin Coolidge put some laws in place around then that had the effect of increasing alcohol poisoning from the bootleg stuff."
"Sure," replied the barkeep. "I'm told it was kind of famous at the time. Spring of 27, the Crusaders of Temperance tried to burn the place down. Almost did. A bunch of them died in the fire."
"You mean the Women's Christian Temperance Union?"
"No, I think maybe they were some sort of splinter group that spun off of the WTCU. A little crazier, though. They were vigilantes, tried to enforce prohibition in places the cops wouldn't. Takes a special kind of fanatic to try and torch bars when the mob owned half of them. Eventually, they went away."
"Or got disappeared," said Mr. Lewis.
"Could be," replied the barkeep. "You think this guy was drinking here in 1927?
"It's possible." Mr. Lewis stood up and backed away from the body. But if he was, he returned to the present before dying. Might not be the kind of curse I suspected if he was released prior to death. Chapter 4: The Wild Party. The next night, they set up shop on the corner again and waited. For 2 hours, things were quiet. Then the bus showed up. A charter bus rolled down the block slowly, as if looking for something. As it got halfway past the construction site, the bar appeared. The bus came to an abrupt stop and backed up.
"Those charters are usually pub crawls," said the barkeep.
The bus's door opened and out filed a line of 20-something women dressed like 1920s flappers, but with French fries dangling out of their mouths and holding half-consumed, grease-stained brown paper bags of food. "Is this normal?" asked Mr. Lewis, starting to cross the street.
"It's a bachelorette party," said the barkeep, running to keep up.
The door of the Bloody Crown was open, and the bachelorette party staggered in. The door started to close after them, but Mr. Lewis caught it before it shut. He and the barkeep slipped in behind the bachelorettes. The door closed behind them, and the Bloody Crown disappeared once more.
"Why are you bringing food in here?"
the doorman bellowed at the bachelorette party, who were collectively ignoring him. The bar was full, and the bachelorette party fit right in with the fashion of the bar's patrons, except for the paper bags and cardboard holders of their takeout food, and perhaps being a bit overdressed for the room. It did seem as though the doorway had been a portal to the Jazz Age.
"It's a bachelorette party," interjected Mr. Lewis.
"A what?"
asked the doorman.
"You know, a hen night."
"Are you drunk?"
asked the doorman.
"No," replied Mr. Lewis. "But that one in the middle is getting married tomorrow, and they're planning on getting very drunk."
"It's an enlightened age."
The doorman's smirk turned into a frown as he took a better look at Mr. Lewis and the barkeep.
"You two been to a costume party?"
"It's for their party."
Mr. Lewis gestured towards the bar. "Groom hired us to chaperone and make sure his bride gets home in one piece."
"I suppose it's good for business,"
muttered the doorman. "Is this what the bar looked like in 1927? Mr. Lewis whispered to the barkeep as they moved further into the place.
"There was a little remodeling done in that corner. That was done in the 60s, though. Yeah, it's the same place, and that corner would look right if we're really back in the 20s. Did we just time travel?"
"Very possibly," said Mr. Lewis, surveying the room. "I'm familiar with the theory behind it, but I've never time traveled before. Does look like it, though."
"Do we get back to the present by walking out the door?"
asked the barkeep. "Let's worry about that after we get our fellow travelers away from the bar," Mr. Lewis replied. "Something will present itself." The barkeep stopped in his tracks and glanced warily back to the front door. It was still there.
Your group just came off a bus? Mr. Lewis asked the closest member of the bachelorette party.
You stay right there, she replied. We have a checklist for tonight. You can help.
She came back with the actual bachelorette and the presumptive maiden of honor, who was brandishing a clipboard.
I'm so glad you want to help.
The matron of honor seemed to enjoy officiating.
The bartender doesn't know how to make a blowjob shot, so that's off the menu for now. How do you feel about body shots?
You really don't want to drink hard liquor here. Mr. Lewis prepared to sell the lie. I'm with the health department, and there are some very unpleasant things going on behind that bar. We wouldn't want anyone getting ill on this special night. If you could come this way, I can get you back on your bus. I'm friendly with the owner of the Rat Bar, and I can get you some free shots.
Already been there. The matron of honor held up a clipboard. Danced on the bar. Check that off the list.
Mr. Lewis started to reply, but was interrupted by shouting from the front of the room. A hand grabbed his shoulder.
Looks like you were right about this being 1927, said the barkeep.
Mr. Lewis turned, and a crowd of 10 women brandishing torches were swarming the building as the doorman tried to avoid having his clothes set on fire.
The Crusaders of the Temperance just showed up.
Chapter 5. Playing with Fire.
Burn! Burn! Burn!
Chanted the ladies of the Crusaders of Temperance at the front of the bar.
Nobody burns my bar,
muttered the barkeep, who turned and took a step forward.
Do not interfere with history,
hissed Mr. Lewis, pulling the barkeep back.
This won't be your bar for decades.
You said the bar doesn't actually burn down?
No, just some fire damage.
Then we concentrate on staying away from the fire, surviving what comes next, and returning to the present when this episode is over. Mr. Lewis approached the matron of honor, who was clearly puzzled by the commotion in the front, but too buzzed to actually care much.
Looks like there might be some trouble up front,
Mr. Lewis whispered in her ear.
You might want to move your group to the back of the bar and stay away from the gin. It's spoiled.
The matron of honor started herding the party towards the back. In the front of the bar, one of the crusaders touched a torch to a table, attempting to set it ablaze. The doorman screamed in protest, and then a curious thing happened. The crusader made a guttural noise, and a narrow stream of flame jumped from the torch to the doorman's jacket, setting it on fire.
You didn't tell me the Crusaders of Temperance were witches, growled Mr. Lewis. They can't be, pleaded the barkeep. They split off from the Women's Christian Temperance Union.
It wouldn't be the first time someone emotionally invested in pushing their values on society decided they didn't have to follow their own rules, replied Mr. Lewis. Is there a back door?
Nope.
The pair stepped back and bumped into the bachelorette party. Where they'd been ambivalent about the presence of yelling and torches, the burning doorman had gotten their attention, as half the bar patrons made a mad dash for the front door and found themselves blocked by the Crusaders of Temperance. Mr. Lewis pointed the bachelorettes toward the ladies' room.
Drink with the devil!
Screamed the presumptive leader of the Crusaders.
Be one with the devil's drink!
The group started chanting again. A patron at the front of the crowd started glowing yellow. The glow extended as a beam towards a bottle on the shelf behind the bar. The patron started to melt, and at the same time, the liquid in the bottle started changing color to the same yellow as the glow.
This is not how it was supposed to have happened,
whispered the barkeep. The first patron had melted into the floor, and the crusaders kept chanting. A flame rose from the table that had been lit at the front of the room. The flame grew in a column until it was just short of the ceiling and then danced like a snake. The lead crusader pointed a finger at another bar patron. The patron started to glow. It was then that the doorman jumped into the assembled crusaders, knocking down three of them. He was severely burned across his torso, but he was alive and angry. Two of the crusaders began to glow. This time, the glow's beam extended to the wall, not a bottle. Then a third crusader began to glow. Then two more patrons.
They lost control of the spell,
said Mr. Lewis as he dragged the barkeep into the women's bathroom and slammed the door behind them. Chapter 6. A Remembrance of Death's Past.
That's a really angry coven, said Mr. Lewis over the screams that leaked through the bathroom door.
What's going on out there? Asked the matron of honor. If they set the building on fire, shouldn't we get out of here?
That's not what happened, said the barkeep.
Let's just agree that we're hearing a series of explosions, offered Mr. Lewis. The chaos will pass, then we can leave, probably.
Does this make it harder to get back to the present?
Asked the barkeep.
You two are drunker than we are,
bellowed the matron of honor, approaching the bathroom door. Mr. Lewis scowled and opened the door a crack to let the matron of honor peer out. When her eyes widened, he shut it again.
What?
Began the matron of honor. Magic that's out of control, said Mr. Lewis in deliberately even tones. That glowing light? That's life's essence leaving the body.
Where's it going?
Asked the matron of honor. Near as I can tell, into the walls, replied Mr. Lewis. They were targeting drinkers and transferring their essence to the liquor bottles. Probably one of them thought it would be an ironic way to rid the world of non-believers in their cause. The question is whether they plan to feed them to other drinkers or pour them down the drain. Point is, we need to stay in here away from that spell until it runs its course.
Does that mean the bar is becoming alive?
Asked the barkeep. Maybe, said Mr. Lewis. I mean, there's a lot of square footage of wood out there. But if the whole crowd is transferred, maybe. That would be a real mess of personalities to assimilate. I'm not sure if it would be able to talk like a sentient being.
Pinocchio,
said the matron of honor. Pinocchio? Repeated Mr. Lewis in the form of a question.
This is like Pinocchio, explained the matron of honor. You know, the blue fairy bringing the wooden puppet to life?
That's the Disney version, sighed Mr. Lewis. But something like that. Don't expect the bar to turn into a little boy, though. In the back of the bathroom, the bachelorette threw up, loudly enough to drown out the screaming from the front room. She didn't drink anything in here, asked Mr. Lewis.
We never got the chance to order,
growled the matron of honor. Do not drink anything in here, said Mr. Lewis. I wasn't joking about that. There's a good chance it will kill you. And then the screaming outside abruptly stopped. Mr. Lewis opened the bathroom door a crack. The bar was empty, so he cautiously continued opening it.
Where did everybody go?
The barkeep peered through the door. The bodies seem to dissipate as the life is pulled out of them, said Mr. Lewis.
That's not how this happened, said the barkeep. The Crusaders of Temperance set themselves on fire, but the whole room didn't die. Nobody on staff did. There's a chain of bar ownership that's not possible if everyone in the room died.
It's possible we somehow changed history. Mr. Lewis left the bathroom and made a beeline for the front door. We'll have to sort that out when we get back to the present. Ladies, follow me, please. We're leaving before anything else happens. The only problem was that the front door would not open, which was more than a little annoying since it was obvious from examining it that the door was neither locked nor bolted.
Fine, sighed Mr. Lewis. Let's try the basics. Follow me, please.
He led the group to the center of the bar, pushed a couple of tables aside, and motioned for the barkeep to stand in the center of the clearing.
Salt is a natural counter to curses, spells, and even ghosts.
Mr. Lewis unscrewed the top of the salt shaker from one of the tables and began pouring it in a circle around the barkeep.
A circle of protection might cancel out whatever spell is keeping us here. Slight problem. If it works and you return to the present in the same physical spot, there's not going to be a floor underneath you. You might reappear on the sidewalk where you were before you entered the time portal. Otherwise, you'll materialize midair and fall into the construction pit. If that happens, get out of the way because we'll be following you.
He closed the circle of salt and stepped back. The barkeep stared back blankly. Nothing happened.
So, if everyone in here got poured into these walls like Pinocchio, began the matron of honor, and we're still inside, doesn't that make us like Pinocchio when he's inside the whale? Inside a living thing?
It's a dogfish in the book, said Mr. Lewis. The movie changed it to be more like Jonah and the whale, but, oh no, we might not be in the past.
Of course we're not, scowled the matron of honor. It's just a theme bar.
If those witches managed to infuse the bar with life force, Mr. Lewis started to sweat. When it was torn down, that would have killed it. If the bar died, we might be inside its ghost.
Chapter 7. Get in my belly. A noise came from the bar.
a sound of wood creaking that also sounded like chuckling. Up from behind the bar floated a platoon of martini glasses. They settled on the bar in a precise line. At either end of the bar, drink shakers appeared and bobbed in the air as though shaken by an invisible bartender. Lids flew off the shakers. They each started at the opposite end of the glasses and started pouring towards the middle.
"Don't touch those drinks!" screamed Mr. Lewis.
"Am I seeing flair bartending from a ghost?"
stammered the barkeep. "Being torn down would qualify as a violent death." Mr. Lewis shook his head. "It's manifesting where it died, projecting flawed memories of its birth, seeking revenge for a violent death. And the way it's killing people seems consistent with the witches that must have started the cycle. Plus, those temperance folks were pretty spiteful in life. This would be all fairly normal for a haunting, except that bars aren't usually alive to leave a vengeful spirit."
"Bars are usually happier," agreed the barkeep. "Most of them, anyway."
The now full martini glasses floated off the bar and circled around the heads of the bachelorette party, just too high to be within reach.
"Those are poison," yelled Mr. Lewis. "I've seen the bodies. Leave them alone."
"Do you talk to ghosts?" asked the matron of honor.
"That's not a bad idea," replied Mr. Lewis. "Very traditional and worth a try." He stepped up to the bar as though to place an order. "We need to talk." Mr. Lewis spoke towards the bottles on the wall. "You're probably a little confused by what's going on. That's normal. You're no longer among the living, and you need to pass on." The bar creaked again, but it didn't sound like chuckling this time. "I'm not sure how many of you are in here, but it's time to leave this plane of existence. Are you able to untangle from each other?" Two glasses drifted away from the bachelorette party and hovered 6 inches in front of Mr. Lewis's face. Then they crashed into each other, showering Mr. Lewis with fragments of glass and the now familiar smell of rot-gut gin. "I'll take that as a no." Mr. Lewis backed up, brushing glass shards off his jacket.
"Are you okay?"
asked the barkeep. "It's not like it's real glass," said Mr. Lewis. "It's just a piece of the ghost. It won't be here after we leave. But that ghost is either feral or knows it's dead and doesn't care." "Hey, get away from that!" The bachelorette had managed to grab one of the floating glasses, and she downed it in one overly dramatic sip. Then two more glasses floated over and tipped their contents not so much into her mouth as all over her face and mouth. The bachelorette let loose a victory whoop, wobbled, and collapsed. The rest of the party huddled around and watched her pass through the floor. A faint thud was audible from beneath the floor.
"What just happened?"
The matron of honor broke the silence. "She drank poison," said Mr. Lewis. "I wasn't joking about that. It might technically be ingesting part of the ghost, but it seems to act like methyl alcohol toxicity. When people die, their body falls out of the ghost. She'll be at the bottom of the construction site. This has happened before." The bachelorette party did not take the news well.
"Is there another way out?"
asked the barkeep.
"This isn't real salt on the tables," said Mr. Lewis. "That's just more bits of the ghost. We'd need real salt to try that, and we don't have any. This entity was born in a fire. If we've brought something inside with us that we can burn, maybe we can disrupt whatever's holding the door together."
"My bar apron is cotton," said the barkeep, taking it off. "That'll burn."
"Worth a try," replied Mr. Lewis as he walked back to the front door. They looped the apron over the doorknob. Then Mr. Lewis produced a match and lit it. The apron burned, but the door remained untouched and unmoving.
"We could try a bigger fire?"
asked the barkeep. Mr. Lewis glanced back toward the bachelorette party. They'd opened up the bags of food they'd walked in with and were nervously eating. "Bring those bags over here," called Mr. Lewis. The bachelorette party walked over in a group. The matron of honor, French fry hanging out of her mouth, started to speak, but Mr. Lewis cut her off. "You all ordered fries," he demanded.
I think so,
said the matron of honor. Mr. Lewis snatched the bag from her and peered into it, shaking it as he did so. "Perfect," said Mr. Lewis. "You went to a greasy spoon and they salted the fries after they put them in the bag. Stand still. You're going to be the first to escape." He reached into the bag and tossed out what was left of the fries, causing an angry murmur to rise from the rest of the party. Then he creased the lip of the bag and poured out its remaining contents of salt and crumbs in a curving line near the matron of honor's feet. 5 inches of salty line later, he snatched away the next food bag and repeated the process until he was an inch away from completing a circle of salt and culinary detritus. "If it works," began Mr. Lewis, "this will disrupt the ghost's form and you'll fall through into the pit. Moreover, when you land, everyone will be right behind you." He closed the circle. The floor beneath the matron of honor shimmered and disappeared, leaving a hole. Mr. Lewis leaned over and saw her hit the ground some 10 feet below the spectral floor. "You," he pointed to the nearest member of the bachelorette party, "jump into the circle." She did. The rest of the party followed, then the barkeep. Mr. Lewis jumped last. When he hit the ground, Mr. Lewis glanced up and the underside of the bar flickered into existence and then disappeared again. He looked over and the bachelorette party had formed a circle around the body of the bachelorette.
"What are we going to do about this?"
cried the matron of honor. "You're going to go home," said Mr. Lewis. "When the police come tomorrow, you're going to say you lost track of her while you were partying. If you tell them you walked into the ghost of a bar that was torn down, they'll probably think you did it and that you've snapped. You'll be lucky if you're not institutionalized or worse. It'll be easier on everyone if your group can manage another stop before going. Makes for a better story. If not, just go home." The matron of honor didn't reply, but she led the group out of the construction pit.
"Where do we go from here?" asked the barkeep.
"More salt," replied Mr. Lewis.
"There's a convenience store down the block?"
"No." Mr. Lewis roamed to the back of the construction pit. "Odds are that the crew will call the cops before the hour is out. We don't want to be seen here." He leant over a small pile of drywall fragments that must have been pushed aside during the building's teardown. "Take this," he said as he handed a chunk of drywall to the barkeep. "Take this to the top of the pit, and I'll meet you there. If you hear sirens, walk away in the opposite direction and don't draw attention to yourself." The barkeep retreated as Mr. Lewis dragged 2 large pieces of drywall towards the front of the pit. He stopped by the bachelorette's corpse, picked up a chunk of cement, and pounded 1 piece of drywall into powder, which he spread unevenly across several feet. Then he pulled the remaining piece to the front of the pit and repeated the process.
"What's that all about?"
asked the barkeep as Mr. Lewis climbed out of the pit. "Drywall is largely made of gypsum," said Mr. Lewis as he began to break up the drywall that had been brought to the top. "Gypsum is a kind of salt. It's not ideal, but I want to make sure that ghost can't reform here tonight. Salting the earth between the sidewalk and the front of the pit ought to keep it away from people if it tries again tonight."
"Is that a permanent solution?"
asked the barkeep. "Tomorrow you'll be contacted by a priest. This is fairly straightforward now that we know what it is. There will be an exorcism, which will probably confuse the police even more than all the drywall fragments at the scene. Just make sure it's been done before sundown. When you're able to resume construction, don't leave any foundation. Salt the earth before you rebuild."
"And that will work?"
"While a building becoming a ghost is unusual, getting rid of ghosts isn't. I do it myself, but my face has been seen by too many people today. Now, we best be gone before the police show up." As the barkeep turned to walk away but was distracted by a flickering of light, turning back to the former site of the bar, the bloody crown was fading in and out like a broadcast television with an interrupted signal, never quite materializing. There was a scream, and its image faded altogether.
"I guess you were right about the gypsum."
The barkeep turned to Mr. Lewis, but Mr. Lewis was already gone.
Thanks for listening to the Storytime Broadcast. That's it for now. You can check out more of T.W. Allen's work at magicdetective.com/books. And we'll see you next time.